The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books. I am Craig Wade.
And I'm Brian Allen Delaney.
And we have a different kind of episode today. We're not really doing any movie reviews. This is more of the older episode point, or the 0.5 episodes, but now we quit naming them 0.5. It's just episode 38, but it's a different thing.
Wait, are we doing it like that now?
Yeah.
Okay.
we had talked about it. Should we talk about it afterward?
All right. Nah, it's fine.
Anyway, yeah, this is actually, we've done a few like this, I guess. The last one being Wes Craven's retrospective.
No, the last one was Army Darkness. Evil Dead stuff.
Yeah, okay.
We've done a few of them.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I mean, we're not really covering B-movies per se this week, but this is all rooted in B-movies, and we're going to talk about Tarantino's filmography before his release of The Hateful Eight. But before we get into that, what do you got, Brian? Anything new?
I saw Star Wars.
How was it?
Really good.
Yeah?
Why did that sound like a question mark? Like, really good?
Yeah?
No, okay. It was similar to Abrams' treatment of Star Trek, where it was a little bit flashier, a little bit more action, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, Star Wars kind of lends itself to that a little bit better than Star Trek does, you know, because, like, Trek has usually a lot of, like, harder sci-fi elements. You know, where wars...
Yeah, it's super hard sci-fi, Brian.
Well, no, it's hard. Like, if you watch, like, the original series and stuff like that, like, what it's based on.
Well, yeah, I mean, it tracks to an outsider, because I liked Abrams' Star Trek, I never watched any of the sequels, but to an outsider from someone as far as the series, I've only really seen shit at your house and then, like, random things. And, I don't know. It just seems like guys talking on a ship. So I can understand that.
But Wars is more of a like a adventure movie. You know, it's like a samurai movie in space. So I think it lends itself to the action a little bit better.
Yeah, I think Star... Oh, I'm sorry. Star Wars... No. I didn't mean to just cut you off. No, I think Star Wars seems, like you said, more fluff. Like, kind of aimed at family, whereas Star Trek, not that it seems just super adult, but it seems much more adult than Star Wars.
Yeah. But, I don't know, this one, it had a lot of, like, kind of callbacks and little hints to the original trilogy. Matter of fact, the whole plot structure was basically A New Hope. Like...
That's what I heard. That
basically exactly the same.
I heard it was beat by beat, basically.
Yeah. Right. It was almost like teetering on a remake, like in a way. I mean, because there was some parts that were exactly the same. Couple other little things, because I don't want to get super spoilery or anything like that.
Not like those jackasses at Longbox Small Talk.
Yeah.
I haven't listened yet, so I don't know if it really is spoilery.
Neither have I. But two things, though. Uh-huh. Okay. Number one, there were some, like, pacing problems I noticed. Like, especially towards the end, they're trying to do something under time constraints, mm-hmm. right? And they're like, we've only got 10 minutes until this happens.
And then we've only got eight minutes till this.
Well, not that, because I'm okay with, like, them showing things that are happening.
Simultaneously, at different times.
Yeah, because that's kind of ties into the Tarantino that we're about to talk about. But it would be like, okay, we've got 10 minutes, and then... You know, there's one part that was really stuck out where T two of the main characters basically climb a ladder, right? That's probably 10 stories high.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a whole scene happens and then they climb all the way down and up a ridge. And it's like, we've got 8 minutes left.
Well, dude, it was the Force.
It probably. But there was that. And I really like the new bad guy, the Kylo Ren guy.
Oh, he's a bad guy in this? That's yeah. Adam Driver, right?
Yeah.
Goofy looking dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's better ways to describe him. But yeah, he's on Girls.
Yeah. I mean, he did a really good job as the bad guy.
He's a really good actor, like really good. And I mean, I'm not a fan of Girls, but I've seen probably
just
five.
In general.
Well, no. Yeah. Gross. No, like freaking. Have you ever watched Girls?
Uh-uh.
It's basically five whiny women. Like, I mean, no, that came off bad. But I mean, literally, it's like first world problems, the TV show. You know,
yeah, that's like, what I hear. It's all a bunch of like
it starts off with like you're cutting me off the trust fund, and it's yeah. like, but anyway, no, he's pretty much one of the saving graces of that show. But the show is well written. But I don't really know that they're supposed to be likable. How the hell did this Star Wars conversation turn into HBO's Girls? Sorry,
Adam Driver.
Oh yeah, it's
one step of separation.
Well,
it's
I guess
not that weird.
I guess the one thing that makes this whole episode feel different than a lot of them is we're at night again. 9 o'clock yeah, at night.
It's weird. On yeah. like a Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's a work night. But yeah. Anyway, so all in all, Star Wars.
Super excited for the next one.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did you watch both Star Treks in theater?
Yeah.
I think I saw the first one. I know I saw it because I saw it with Bill, but I think I saw it again. I really like Star Trek. I don't know why I didn't watch Into Darkness.
I would say that the Abrams reboots of Star Trek like really work well for like a modern audience.
Yeah. I mean, which one was your favorite?
Like of all the movies?
Yeah. No, not the movies, the TV shows. Which one, like Next Generation or just old God, Star Trek dude. Or like Voyager or what? Obviously
it's
not
a question. No, because I've seen them all, basically.
Every episode of all of them?
Pretty much.
Oh God. It goes deeper than I thought.
Well, no, and it's also like my wife and I watch Voyager or Deep Space Nine every night.
Oh, like, really?
Basically, that's what we go to sleep to. Yeah.
I didn't know it still comes on.
Well, no, we have the. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's on Netflix, but we actually bought like all the DVDs of Voyager. Voyager's her favorite, right?
That was the one that came out on the UPN when we were
correct.
In, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, so that one's good. I mean, they all have their own merits. Like the original series is like a lot more cerebral. Right. But then there's also just weird ones where there's like cowboy worlds and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you have to. Next Generation was a lot the same way. Uh-huh. Right. Like it was really it got kind of deep sometimes. Right. And then Voyager was a little different. I mean, it was fun, you know, and it was like weird because it had. Oh, I guess Deep Space Nine came first. Right? Oh, no, she's not even listening to me. Okay. Deep Space Nine was weird because it was like overarching stories and not like Monster of the Week type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a first. But that one was different because it was like all on a space station. Why are we getting into this?
I don't know. I just asked what your favorite one was.
I don't know. That's the hard part.
Who's your favorite character?
I can tell you my favorite captain. And it's like not one that everybody else likes.
It's not Shatner?
Not Sisko, dude from Deep Space Nine.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wish I knew who that was.
James Avery?
Oh, really? Okay, I know who that guy is.
Yeah.
Cool.
He did a lot of voice acting and stuff, too.
Yeah, wasn't he in some movie we watched a while back? No, remember that shitty that's not narrowing it. No, that really bad sci-fi one where the aliens came to Earth and things seemed like they were going to get better, but then they just, it turned into like a torture porn movie and then everyone died. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that at all.
Really?
Yeah.
It was one Age of Something.
Oh, yay.
Wasn't James Avery in that movie? Wait.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like Edge of Tomorrow Asylum ripoff.
Yeah, it was Age of Tomorrow.
Not, yeah, it was not at all.
No, not at all. Anyway, but wasn't he in that?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you, I got really into two things this past weekend. One of which was there was a comic book at Toxic City that I walked by, and it was called I Hate Fairyland. And I was like, what's up with this, to Chevy? And he's like, oh, dude, you got to see this one. And I was like, he's digging through boxes and shit. And like, he's like, yeah, we keep this hidden. Yeah, it's called Fuck Fairyland. And it's basically, like, it's really, really, really good. He kind of twisted my arm because he's like, dude, you would like this. And I was like, I mean, it kind of looks not really my thing. And he's like, I'm telling you, you would like this. And I'm not saying that, like, it's the best thing I've ever seen, but it's kind of like Tiny Toon Adventures meets, like, Tarantino or something, because it's like extreme violence, and then the main character looks like Elmira, but she like, she's stuck. It's kind of like a, you know, she goes to Wonderland type thing. It's Fairyland, but she goes there, and it's supposed to be she's sent on like a 1.5 day mission, and it's 27 years later, and she's like an adult stuck in this child's body, and all she gives a shit about is killing and drinking.
Nice.
Really, really good. I got the first three issues, but yeah, it's by Scotty Young. Yeah, and it's really good. And see, I was like, yeah, I want to buy the dirty edition, and because Chevy was like, yeah, blah blah blah. The other one, you know, she makes up cuss words and stuff, and I was like, eh, that didn't sound right. But apparently, the only difference is the cover, because really, there's no F words or anything in the other one, like in the one that I have. It would be great though if in the clean one it was just super bad language. but yeah, I would highly recommend anyone checking that out. I think Image put it out.
Is it just a graphic novel or?
It's right now they're just on issue 3, so I just picked it.
So it's just trade.
I mean, it's not even a trade yet. I bought 3 issues.
Okay.
So anyway, but yeah, it's really, really good. I highly recommend it. And then the other thing, F is for Family. It's on Netflix. It's Bill Burr's new TV show.
Oh yeah, I saw it, but I didn't watch it.
So good.
It was on my suggested queue.
Were you ever a fan of King of the Hill, really?
You know, not really whenever it was on.
Uh-huh.
But I watched the reruns of it a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was so much better than I remembered.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, same thing here. I mean, I'll watch it. I guess before we canceled cable, I would watch it if it was on. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember being a big fan of it. I always thought it was kind of amusing, but that was about it, you know? But this reminds me of a hard R version of King of the Hill. It's hard R, dude. It's pretty good. But, you know, I'm a huge Bill Burr fan. Yeah. But so funny. And the cast is Bill Burr, Laura Dern, Justin Long, and Sam Rockwell is the voice cast. And so it's really, just really, really good. Just a screwed up King of the Hill. So anyway, I watched all of them in one night. It was amazing. I'm probably going to rewatch them. Really, really good. But
cool.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick before speaking of voice acting,
uh-huh.
In the credits of Star Wars, it was the new droid is BB-8, right?
Yeah.
And it was BB-8 voice consultant, Bill Hader.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he do that?
No, he didn't do the voice.
Huh.
I mean, unless there's just another dude who does voices named Bill Hader.
I like that Bill Hader really doesn't get much play for all of his work on South Park. But mm-hmm. like he's like heavily involved. He does some yeah. voices. He writes a lot of it. Like, I don't know. It's nuts that he still is doing that. In fact, I was thinking that he's no longer on that.
No, he was all over this last season.
Yeah, this last season proved me otherwise. Just which is that the end of PC Principle?
I think so. Well, is that the end? Did you see the finale?
Yeah.
It just basically started at where episode one began.
Yeah.
Or it ended at.
Yeah. I mean, but are they going to pick up and act like that never happened or what?
No, I bet he's going to be a new principal.
Oh, really?
I bet he's just not. I bet that he'll be the new principal, but he just won't have a big part.
Huh.
Yeah. It'll be like old principal.
South Park this season, I don't really give a shit what anyone says. It's been a phenomenal season.
These last two seasons have been amazing.
Really? I don't know that I caught all of last season. That wasn't the Black Friday one, was it?
It was like one of the story arcs was like the Randy being Lord and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess with that, we will be right back. That's not really that good of a wrap up, but whatever. We'll be right back with our Tarantino talk.
Shop nonstop while I got paid. Wrote a script about Mallory and Mickey. Stories kind of gory, some said sort of sickening. Wrote a rom-com about Elvis, quote, creature, fall in love. And a sunny chip with cheapo feature stole hooker from a pimp. Stole coke from the Sopranos. And he sold it to just silver before everything go well. One script in the stack, which I wanted to act. Fuck rejected by readers, and in 1 year they will track. QT, motherfucking late fees, motherfucker. I'm dropping M-bombs like what? Motherfucker, transform, motherfucker. You been warm, motherfucker. Bitch, slap from a Kango cat, motherfucker. QT, motherfucking late fees, motherfucker. I'm dropping M-bombs like what? Motherfucker, transform, motherfucker. You been warm,
welcome back. That was Tarantino by MC Chris off his album Race Wars. that was it. That's all the morning DJ I got in me.
Yeah. No, sorry. I was looking up our poll results because I had closed that tab.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So
I don't know why I closed the tab.
I would say not, you know, okay. Not really that often does, like, a filmmaker come around that is a Tarantino-quality filmmaker. How many of our generation are, like, Tarantino-type filmmakers? I can't think of many that can...
Well, if you don't count Spy Kids, Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, but Robert Rodriguez at his best... And I'm a Robert Rodriguez fan. None of his movies come... hit Tarantino's level of quality, do they?
I would say
From Dusk Till Dawn is
Desperado.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Sin City.
No, Sin City's really, really, really good. No, but I mean, at the same time, Robert Rodriguez seems like a smart businessman and somebody that will cash a paycheck and make whatever film. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't seem like artistic integrity comes first with him. It definitely seems like he
It's just, well, no, because like I think even like the Sharkboy and Lava Girl stuff like that and the Spy Kids and everything, mm-hmm. there was a level of craft to it.
Oh, definitely.
Because he did all of that, like, basically by himself.
Definitely. I think...
And one of them, Spy Kids 3D, I think it was, or it might have been Shark Boy and Lava Girl, was going to be, like, the first full-length feature film that was shot in 3D, but, like, Avatar beat it to the box office.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think Robert Rodriguez is definitely much more of a versatile... Like, all around, you know, he grabs a camera, he shoots it, he edits it, he does a lot of the music, he caters his own things. Like, it's insane. The
well,
level.
He owns, like, El Rey, or doesn't he own a...
El Rey Network.
No, I mean, doesn't he own, like, a food thing, too?
I don't know.
That guy's got a diversified portfolio.
No, I love Robert Rodriguez. That said, I don't know that he's made... I think you're right. Sin City's about it, like, as far as... I mean,
first Sin City is like an amazing movie.
I think the thing that is the difference between Robert Rodriguez. I mean, I honestly feel like he makes a lot of the kids movies just for cash. And I've heard him say that he does.
And for his kids, too.
But I've heard him in interviews say that he kind of does. But yeah, he has fun. But there's nothing wrong with that. Hell, I would do that in a second. Wouldn't you score a movie that was... doesn't really play to your artistic sensibilities?
Of course.
Yeah, exactly. But he's had...
Anybody who wants me to can send me an email.
He's had a lot of hits. He's never had a full-blown miss. Or he's... Tarantino has never had a full-blown miss, and I think Robert Rodriguez probably has.
So what do you think, then, are these qualities here that you're ascribing to Tarantino? Like, what are these mythical unicorn qualities?
Reverence for cinema in general.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like he, you know, he doesn't, I don't know, like Scorsese or somebody like that, it is amazing, but generally they're amazing at crime movies. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And Tarantino's all over the place, but he consistently puts out like these just jacked up, awesome movies. And even though, you know, he doesn't stick to one genre in particular, you know, mm-hmm. there's not many directors that can handle like just long periods of dialogue. And yet his films generally have that and mm-hmm. still just remain amazing. He's not really, I don't know. He just has like an encyclopedic knowledge of film and a genuine love for film. Like, everything in his life revolves around film.
Okay, I will posit a response, someone I think fits most of these criteria, if not all of them.
Who?
Who's working today,
uh-huh.
who basically pushes out Hollywood gold, Ron Howard.
Yeah, but I would say Ron Howard's closer to, like, Spielberg. He cares about pleasing the masses. And... you know what I'm saying? It's not that Tarantino doesn't, but it does seem like Tarantino is a big risk taker, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Ron Howard, to me, is he makes great movies, but he doesn't make... You can't, like, watch a movie and be like, that's a Ron Howard movie. But every Tarantino movie has his like stamp, you know?
He's like a film chameleon.
Yeah.
Like, Ron Howard does well with everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fine, and that's totally great. But it's not what makes legends. Maybe it is. I don't know.
But, well, no, I get what you're saying. It's like, you know, the both of them excel at what they do, but Tarantino always hits a tone that is like his thumbprint sort of thing.
And he's like undeniable. His worst is still really, really good, you know? Like,
he's done other things besides the 8 on the list, mm-hmm. or the 7 on the list. But, like, do you think there's some sort of correlation between his relatively low output, like, and the quality of the work?
Probably. And the fact that everything that he's done that is part of his 8 films, he's written... You know, like mm-hmm. even Jackie Brown was adapted from an Elmore Leonard novel, but he was a co-writer on it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, he wants to see the entire vision from Inception all the way on. Like, Inception to wrapping production. He wants to oversee all of it. So, yeah, he takes him about 3 years to... What?
Nothing.
No, like, if you track it, he does three a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I think, yeah, there's a lot of credibility to that, whereas Robert Rodriguez or a lot of people will take that extra in between movies, paycheck movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing wrong with that. I would be that guy. I would take all paycheck movies. Keep me out of all of it.
In a way, though, he's kind of like Kubrick then.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I don't know that he's as much of a like, he doesn't have as much of an eye for the cinematography that Kubrick did. But I don't know. It just seems like Kubrick shot more epic stuff than Tarantino. Mm-hmm. But I would watch Tarantino films 10 to 1 over Kubrick. Even though I like Kubrick. I just don't like every Kubrick movie. How many directors are there that you like every film that they've ever put out?
Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, but he's only had like four. Five.
No. All three Batmans.
I count as one movie.
Okay. Memento, Inception.
And Following.
I never saw The Following.
It was okay.
Let me see. What else? There's more, right?
No, just that and that space movie that came out. Interstellar.
Oh, yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, just that stupid space movie.
I didn't see it.
It was amazing. I watched it like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nothing against Christopher Nolan, like, but no, again,
you just asked how many
if you're having
other directors
put,
there are. Yeah, that I like every movie.
But what I'm saying is, like, world class. Would you say
Tarantino?
Yeah,
yeah.
Would he be? Where would he rank on your top film directors of all time?
He'd probably be pretty up there, just because, like you, what you said is just a matter of consistency.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. You know, I don't know. Like, if I just placed some off the top of my head,
mm-hmm.
just thinking like who I like the best,
mm-hmm.
And not necessarily like I can admit that they're not necessarily objectively the best directors,
uh-huh.
but my favorites, you know, you get like Peter Jackson.
Uh-huh.
And like, and Raimi.
See, I was actually going to say Sam Raimi reminds me of that, like of Tarantino, except for he mm-hmm. also takes the paycheck movies too.
Yeah, like Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jackson and Raimi, Tarantino, Nolan, Kubrick's probably up there, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess a lot of.
Carpenter.
Yeah, early Carpenter.
I'm wearing a Thing t-shirt right now.
No, exactly. The Thing is awesome, but the Ward Carpenter, no, dude. But see,
like the first Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, that movie. So I don't care what anyone says; it's not that good,
dude.
We laughed.
The ice cream scene.
Anyway, whatever. But I don't know. I mean, he's just
Frank Darabont.
Frank Darabont's got a damn good filmography.
He's, like, probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, he'd be up there for me. But Tarantino is probably number two on my list, maybe. Yeah.
Who's one?
He's the worst director. My favorite director of all time's got to be Kevin Smith.
Okay.
He has to be. Like, what?
It's like you lost a bet or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's paying me. No, but like, he's got to be. I love Kevin Smith movies, even when they're not good. And I can definitely recognize that they're not all good. But Clerks had so much like passion, and it was Clerks like holds so much in my heart that it's hard to say otherwise. But I would say it would be him. It would be Kevin Smith, then probably Tarantino, then possibly actually Edgar Wright for his relatively light film output. He's batting 1,000 in my book, whereas Kevin Smith mm-hmm. is not. Kevin Smith's batting closer to 500, but I don't know. Like Edgar Wright, I would say, and honestly, Ty West actually may make my,
yeah,
because he's so like, it's not really, it's that all of those people have their stamps on the movie. There's no denying who made any of their mm-hmm. movies. And I find that interesting. Because yeah. as like the silent creative person leaving their stamp on a project is, I would think that that's extremely hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Raimi might make it. I don't know. Raimi's so good.
Well, you can definitely tell Raimi's voice too.
Yeah.
As a director.
Yeah. It's sad. Like where I'm like, my weaknesses for Raimi would be like, the Spider-Man movies. Like, and I liked 1 and 2, and 3 was a movie.
2 was really good.
No, I really liked them. But
because Alfred Molina was great as Doc Ock.
Yeah. Well,
what?
I'm just laughing.
He came a long way from that guy who was like, throw me the idol in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. No, I was laughing at you just looking down at whatever and just like, Alfred Molina was great. And just still like just looking down at whatever it was. No, I'm sure. But anyway, so we're going to go through Tarantino. That's like the longest intro ever for Tarantino discussion. We took it to the polls to figure out of his 7 official movies.
Like official,
in quotation yeah, quotation marks. The ones he counts as his films. We took it to Twitter and our website to see, basically whose favorite film or what Tarantino film would be everyone's favorite, and what were the results.
So, well, here just to list them real quick, in chronological order here: Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill as one movie. Death Proof, Inglourious Basterds, and Django Unchained. Those are the 7 we're counting.
Yeah. We're okay. not counting True Romance, Natural Born Killers, or From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. We're not counting
One Scene Out of Sin City.
Yeah. We're not counting things that he may have directed a small piece or written the film, because those aren't his like auteur type movies that he's counting. So yeah, things like Four Rooms, those are out. Do it.
These are like, could even be seen as being in the same universe. Like there's a lot of like callbacks and things like that to him.
Yeah. Well, he's like tried to break down what his universe is. And he's like, yeah, there's like the for real, real universe. And then there's the fake universe. And so they all like Pulp Fiction is a film with, or I'm sorry, Kill Bill is a film within Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And because
I can see that.
And so I don't know, but yeah.
But like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction have to be
in the same universe because it's the Vega mm-hmm. brothers. Yeah.
Anyway, so not surprisingly, Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Basterds were the top. Okay? They're actually tied for 1.
Oh, really?
Both at like 25% of the votes.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there is a 1-2-3-way tie for 2nd place mm-hmm. Between Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, and Django. The one that surprises me is Death Proof being so low on the list.
Really?
Squarely in last place.
I love Death Proof, but it's 2nd to last for me.
See, the thing is, like, why do you think everyone hates it?
Well, I think honestly, because a lot of people don't. No one went and saw Grindhouse. I saw it.
He did.
Yeah, I saw it 3 times in the theater.
It was amazing in the theater.
Yeah, it was great. But no one saw Grindhouse. And then they split it, tried to do, like, I think in some markets, a theatrical release of Planet Terror and then Death Proof as split bill movies. And then it went to DVD as separate films before finally combining back in the original theatrical Grindhouse cut. But mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people thought that it was like just a straight to DVD movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of things that were holding Grindhouse back was the fact that he tried to make a Grindhouse movie. You know, I mean, like, it was so firmly rooted in the 70s. Like, whenever you're watching Transformers and shit blow each other up on screen, is it really impressive when a girl is hanging off of a stunt car? Now, yeah, I think yes. But I don't think that audiences think that. Like,
I mean, I think it was, it maybe it was so stylized that it lost some people. Because we mentioned, you know, that he was able, he's able to take whatever genre he's doing and kind of bend it to, you know, his own sort of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of seemed like the opposite was going on in Death Proof. Like, he kind of took this style of movie
and just made that movie.
Yeah. You know, no, I'm saying it's like he kind of got lost in it.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, I think one thing that really kind of pissed people off with Death Proof also was the fact that you get 45 minutes in and then all of your main characters are killed and you start over again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, 45 on like the extended cut, which I think is the other thing holding it back is in theaters. I loved Planet Terror versus Death Proof. Yeah. I thought that that came out like Rodriguez killed Tarantino in that thing. However, watching them separately at your house and watching the extended cuts of both of them separately, God, Death Proof is so, so good. And there's really not much of a difference between the extended and the other cut. Like, there's not a whole lot. Like, they kind of meander around the town a little bit more. That's about it. But anyway, so, okay, we talked about that Tarantino, both of us feel like, us and America feels like he's super influential. But what is your earliest like Tarantino memory, or what is the one that sticks out with you the most, if it's not like an earliest?
It might not be my favorite one, right? But I would say Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Because that's the one that, that's the first one I really remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I remember being kind of confused at first because I was a little kid or whatever.
Yeah, about we were the, like 11.
Yeah, when they, like the non-linear. Yeah. How it wasn't linear kind of threw me off at first. And then like once I kind of caught on to what was happening, I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. You know, because it's like you don't get movies, or I never really saw movies that were like that before.
No, I didn't either.
Where it's like cutting apart the plot to make it, you know, I don't want to necessarily say like fit better, but like the pacing changed, you know, completely. It's like everything was told out of order to build up to this big point, as opposed to like, you know, if they did it chronologically, it would be, all right, here's some ebbs and flows in the story.
Yeah.
And it was just like really, really neat. And then, you know, you start watching other Tarantino things, or you go back and you watch Reservoir Dogs, like I did afterwards, you know, and it's like, oh, well, that's just the way he tells stories, you know?
Yeah.
And except for Django wasn't really like that, was it?
No, and neither was Jackie Brown. Neither was, what was that?
Death Proof wasn't.
Yeah, really. I guess Inglourious Basterds had flashbacks and stuff, but
yeah, it was. Inglourious Basterds was more like following three different, you know, groups of people.
Yeah, they were much more like standard Hollywood flashbacks.
Yeah,
not just let's screw around with storytelling as a framework, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I saw Pulp Fiction when I was 10 or 11 at the Dollar Theater with my parents. And growing up, I really was, you know, we've talked about it before. We were both kind of allowed to watch whatever. Assuming, I don't really, like, my parents weren't really super cool if they walked in and I was watching just something with tons of nudity or anything like that. And I'm like 10, you know, they'd be like, turn that off. But in fact, and by super cool, I mean, they would not have been cool with that at all. But anyway, but So they would like let me watch a lot of things as long as they had kind of screened or felt it out or whatever. Well, they knew that this film didn't have nudity.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really care so much about language. Okay. But they knew mm-hmm. that this film didn't have nudity, so we go to the theater. I think they were blown away by the amount of bad language and, like, content. You know, like, yeah. violence and, like, so much.
Drug use.
Yes. It was not a kid's movie. And I remember my mom being like, let's go. Let's go. Like, halfway through, she was pissed off. And my dad was like, all right, well, let's kind of... I mean, come on, we're here.
Let's see where this goes.
And so, anyway, yeah, like, they eventually, you know, we ended up staying. But I remember we had already made it almost, you know, very far in whenever they get to the whole Zed scene.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a point where my mom's like, we're going, you know? Like, but to me... I mean, you know, I'm 11 and I know at the time, I know that this is just, it's a movie, you know, I didn't yeah. think it was like horrible or anything. Like drugs were just something I wasn't supposed to do. You know, it's not like I was like, you know, I saw that and let's do drugs. I didn't think that it like pushed any of it, but I was like, holy shit, there's just so much amazing stuff going on that I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And it really felt not really dangerous or anything. Like I've mentioned before that like Last House on the Left felt dangerous to me yeah. and to a lesser extent, Devil's Rejects. Certain films have that, you know, just crazy dangerous feel. This almost felt like the opposite. It was almost like watching, you know, Looney Tunes or something.
Home movies.
No. It was so outlandish that it was just fun. Absolute mm-hmm. fun, and that stuck with me. Like 94, like that was just an insane year for me. Like I watched that and watched Clerks, neither of which my parents were happy about, and and both of those films have stuck with me so much.
I'm pretty sure that we rented it, right? Because my mom was a huge John Travolta fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And well, I knew she was a big Travolta fan. I remember
we had a picture of him from Saturday Night Fever on our refrigerator.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. I remember asking her about. I was like, so okay, before you got with your dad, Brian's dad, would you have run away? And she's just like, yes.
Good times.
That was funny. But yeah, so y'all just watched it. Y'all watched it because she was a Travolta fan.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you know, and this is what the movie that put him back on the map, right?
Yeah, it pulled him out of all the Look Who's Talking films and gave him
which Bruce Willis was also in
and gave him the opportunity to make Battleship.
Oh my god. He should have Battlefield Earth.
Shit,
dude, he should have cast Kirstie Alley as Uma Thurman's character.
Yeah, she would just never had that second life.
It would have just been, you know, Look Who's Talking reunion.
Yeah. And I mean, this was the first movie that I remember. I know that she was in Mad Dog and Glory, but this is the one that really put Uma Thurman on the map as far as public consciousness, right?
I believe so.
And really, honestly, all good Uma Thurman movies have been with Tarantino.
So she's made two?
Yeah. Guess so. Sorry.
You know what's weird is who also stuck with me from that movie? Eric Stoltz.
Yeah. Yeah, we were seeing a different Stoltz.
Yeah.
Well, I think Roger Avery had this weird deal with him because, you know, Roger Avery, like, co-wrote Pulp Fiction and he was, like, heavily involved in it. And he had this weird deal with Eric Stoltz where every movie that he made, Eric Stoltz would be in. But then he, like, you know, didn't really make a whole lot of movies. He made Silent Hill, but Eric Stoltz wasn't in there. So that story went nowhere, but I do remember reading about that once. So maybe I just had it totally wrong. Welcome to B Movies and Ebooks, where we don't research facts, and sometimes we'll spit out bullshit as the truth.
Yeah, and we'll usually not ever recant.
No.
So, which one would you say Pulp Fiction is your favorite?
I think Pulp Fiction, because it carries the nostalgic weight along with it, and I love the film, that is my favorite. However, Reservoir Dogs is a close second, but there's no film of his that I hate. I think that the least enjoyable one is Jackie Brown.
I've never actually seen it.
That's the only one you hadn't seen, though, right?
Correct.
It honestly, it doesn't have, like, I know me and Bill have gone back and forth about this multiple times.
That's his favorite.
It's his favorite?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we've gone back and forth about it, and he loves it, but it's not that I don't like it. I really like it. I don't think that it's classic Tarantino in my book, but who gives a shit what my book says?
Here's what Bill said. He said, Jackie Brown by far. I realize the Fairweather fans will pick Pulp Fiction. I can't say it. So he's calling you out right there.
That's just Bill just trying to be obscure. He picked the shittiest one and said that it's his best.
No, he said Jackie is easily his best ensemble piece, an excellent cast. So he's going basically by acting.
It has. No, his best ensemble would be Pulp Fiction.
Or Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I guess. But dude, like even the cameos in Pulp Fiction were known people. Yeah. You know,
how did he get so many?
Like Steve Buscemi is the fucking he's the waiter. You know, I don't know. Like Jackie Brown is a hell of a cast, though. It's got like Bridget. God, what was her name? She used to be real big. Bridget Fonda and De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good movie, but it's not. I don't think that you can be like, oh, yes. Like, there's a reason that Pulp Fiction is so firmly rooted in American cinema, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Whatever. Bill, I'm calling you out. That was just you trying to be obscure.
I would say Reservoir Dogs is my favorite. It's just something about it, and like the tension that you get in the fact that it was basically a bottle episode.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like you find out that he's a cop, you know.
What?
Like, the movie, but it's like all this kind of just tension that's boiling up and coming to a head. And then there's like the cop torture scene, and it's just like, it's just so tense, like the whole movie. It's really, really good.
Reservoir Dogs is a film that me and Kelsey at least watch 4 times a year. We have seen that movie so many times. Like, I friggin' love Reservoir Dogs. Like, so good. It's just, I didn't see it whenever I was 11. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I saw it whenever I was like 17 or something. Like, in fact, I remember not wanting to watch it for a long time just because I didn't like the name.
Because Eric Stoltz wasn't in it.
Yeah. I was just mad that Roger Avery wasn't involved.
But I will say, like, second.
I think he may have been involved. No, he wasn't.
I mean, Pulp Fiction is probably second, like you said, just because of the influential factor. But then it's really hard for me to decide what would come next.
Yeah, that's where it gets screwy. I would say, I mean, you remember when Kill Bill came out. I had that huge Kill Bill poster on my wall. Like, I loved Kill Bill. But then, like, Volume 1. But then Volume 2 came out, and I went very much more Fairweather about Kill Bill. And I realized that it's all part of the same film. However, it's so top-loaded as far as just fun stuff. And, like, it was just stylized violence, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then part two was, like, stylized violence with a lot of talking.
Stylized backstory, the movie.
Yeah. And so I love Kill Bill, but I would normally place that at number 3. But since we have to count them both together, I'm going to drop that down one and say Inglourious Basterds would be number three.
That movie is very, very good.
Yeah. Then I would say Kill Bill. What are we on, four now? Then, I don't know. Then I would say...
You already said Jackie Brown was the lowest and Death Proof was above that, so Django would have to go next.
You know what? I'm gonna reverse that. I'm going to say that it would be Jackie Brown, Death Proof, then Django. Django is my least favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I do think... Because... Okay.
So you're going to put Death Proof under Jackie Brown now?
Yeah. I mean, yeah... The thing is, okay, it's not, for me, I've seen Jackie Brown four times. I can tell mm-hmm. you four times I've seen it. I've seen it once in this house, twice at the apartment, whatever, and then once at my parents' house whenever it was a new release. Like, it wasn't, but it's never really made like this huge splash with me. And mm-hmm. Django's kind of the same. They're both really good movies, but... I don't find them to be like just super rewatchable.
I can see that.
Now, Death Proof, I've seen probably 10, 12 times. And it's not like it's rewatchable, but it's not as good. You know what I'm saying? So those, like they're counteracting. I don't know. Either way, those are the bottom three for me. And maybe it changes day by day. Who knows? I mean, honestly, who knows? Everything's so subjective. Like, what, you know, other than, like, my favorite of all time, things are pretty subjective. Yeah,
it's kind of fluid down there.
Yeah. Yeah, but either way, I mean, such a fantastic filmmaker. Now, there's... okay, Brian, you gotta rate him. What do you...
it would probably go... like from best to worst.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do Jackie Brown because I haven't seen it, so it's just not going to be on the list. It would probably go Reservoir, Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds. Then I don't know, because Kill Bill and Inglourious Basterds would be really close for me.
Yeah.
And then it would go probably Death Proof, Django.
So Django's at the bottom of your list.
But that's not really saying much, though.
No, because it's still a really good movie.
Yeah.
But I didn't find it just super rewatchable. Did you? I mean, have you seen... I've seen it twice.
I think I've still only seen it once.
Yeah. I mean, it was great.
It was. Twice. Jamie Foxx was good in it. Christoph Waltz was great. Leonardo DiCaprio
was awesome in it. I've always hated Jamie Foxx. So, I mean, I don't know why.
Even from In Living Color?
Well, I think it was that whole stint whenever he decided that he was Ray Charles. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, whenever he'd start doing concerts and stuff. And
yeah, that was weird.
When he was popping up on, like, Jay-Z albums. And I'm like, no, go back to comedy. That was
weird.
So, anyway, between that and all the weird tattoos on the back of his head. I don't know. Not a fan, but whatever. He's got a lot more talent than I do. So he wins. I don't have to like him.
I don't know. I don't see him co-hosting a podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So Tarantino said a few things somewhat recently. He's going to stop at 10 movies, right?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been saying he's going to retire for a while. He wanted to get in, make his money, make his statement, get out. You know?
So is it going
to
be like Hateful Eight, like Naughty Nine, Terrible Ten?
Well, there's a few funny things about this. Okay, so I watched the Comic-Con panel with Hateful Eight.
Okay.
And, well, it wasn't the full eight. Somebody, Mr. Jackson, didn't show up. But anyway, so he did say that part of the reason was that they're running out of film and he refuses to make movies without film.
Okay.
Such a douche-tastic answer.
I know.
That's so smarmy. Like, that pisses me off.
And that doesn't even make sense. You can make new film.
But they're not going to. Like.
Well, I mean, they just started making 70 millimeter. That didn't happen before.
Well, anyway, did they or did he? I don't know.
I mean, that's 70 millimeter is not an old stock thing.
Yeah, but isn't that the IMAX thing?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the IMAX one, so they made it for IMAX.
No, there's only like a couple of cameras that actually do 70 millimeter.
Yeah.
Like real 70 millimeter.
Well, either way, so.
It's still dumb.
Yeah, it's a horrible answer. But since then, on Bret Easton Ellis's podcast, he said that that's not the problem. They get enough film.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know, keeps fluctuating back and forth about whether or not he's going to do that. But either way, he doesn't want to be, per the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, doesn't want to be one of those people that beginning of his career was great, 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 and then he started losing touch. And I think that he feels that he is losing touch. And if you watch any interview with him.
Real quick, first 70 millimeter format film was in 1896.
Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books.
I just wanted to throw that out there so people can know how wrong I was.
I find that really, really sad, though, if that is the reason. But he did say, he was like, dude, I didn't say I wouldn't do miniseries. I didn't say I wouldn't make. He was like, I could make an HBO show. I could do whatever.
Oh.
He was like, I could do whatever. I just can't make a film if it's not shot on film.
I would love to see an HBO Vega Brothers show.
See, I would. Yeah, that'd be great. But I would. But
only if it's actually Michael Madsen and Travolta.
But I've seen Tarantino direct an episode of CSI.
And you gonna bring up that one episode of CSI?
Yeah, it wasn't good. So, I don't know. But I think that, you know, playing in an existing franchise is way different than creating something new. Okay, let's say he does make 10 films. He's got three more left. Are you sad to see him leave? Or did you think, and assuming that they're all good, you know, he didn't make one stinker.
In a way, I'd rather see someone go out on top.
Yep. I agree. I hate to see him leave, but it's so much better than what, like, Carpenter, Craven,
nothing.
Carpenter, Craven, Toby Hooper. Like, I realize these are all horror directors, but, you know, or Joe Dante, like, just watching them try and try to reclaim what they had at one time.
No, yeah. I think it's a smart move.
Yeah.
So if he's only got two movies left in him, 9 and 10, what do you want to see from him?
Well, he did say something that I was very excited to hear.
Horror?
Oh, no, I don't. I mean, I think I don't. When they announced Death Proof, I was so excited.
I guess that's kind of a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be. But when they announced it.
Thriller.
When they announced it, I was like, dude, he's making a horror film with Robert Rodriguez. This is going to be the best thing ever. You know, thinking about like From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, we were super excited. Yeah, it was awesome. But the execution wasn't really horror. And I don't think that he should sacrifice his style. To do a horror film, and it's going to be, I don't know that he has like the sense of pacing to do horror. He could do something very atmospheric, but I don't know. I don't know. It definitely wouldn't be a slasher horror. And that's what I would love to see him do out of all, you know, just like a straight up slasher. But but no, he did say that he was like, I've never considered anyone to be a Western director because they were like, you know, you've done Django Unchained and now you're doing Hateful Eight. Are you a Western director now? And he goes, you know, I've never considered somebody to be a Western director until they make 3 Western films. And I really want to be a Western director. So nice. I'm super pumped. I mean, Django for... It's still a great movie. It's just I hadn't watched it a million times. I could not be more excited to see Hateful Eight.
I mean, I really like spaghetti westerns as a
Yeah,
as I a do thing. Too. And I feel like Django is a spaghetti western.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And I'm excited for that because I like good westerns, and I feel like there hasn't been too many lately.
No, and like westerns are such a good format for having just shithead heroes or shithead bad guys, you know? Like, you can have, like, the meanest, shittiest people that ever walk this earth. And because it's a Western, you're just like, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, no, I mean, look at, like, Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Uh-huh. You know, or, like, that whole series. The good guy's not a good guy.
But, yeah.
You know, it's like, he's not really a good guy. He's just the least bad out of those three people.
Yeah. Well, you know? I love films where there's not good guys. Like, where there are no good guys.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it kind of raises the stakes as far as expectation.
Well, then, you know, maybe that really does make Tarantino hit you a little bit harder. Because, like, he doesn't usually have them. I mean, or like who's the good guy in Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction?
Bruce Willis?
I guess Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis?
Him, maybe. Samuel L. after he has the...
Yeah.
Change the of heel heart. Turn. But yeah, he definitely deals in shades of gray. He doesn't... Yeah. There are no absolutes.
Yeah, because I mean, you could even argue that like the bride isn't really... that good of a good guy.
No, she only turned like, good whenever she found out she was pregnant.
No, I'm saying like even after that, I mean, you could argue it's vengeance or whatever, but you don't have to like maim all these people.
You know, if you think back about it, she never really killed Daryl Hannah.
Well, she left her in there with that snake.
Yeah, but we don't know.
You think there should be a sequel?
No. Not at all. I would be really bummed if he wrapped up on
the
sequel.
Does that mean he's not going to be able to do the their kids fighting each other? Kill Bill sequel?
I don't know. Is that part of his 10? Who knows?
Because he said he wanted to do it, but only whenever the actresses were actually like
another the smarmy right age. Asshole answer.
I mean, come on. That's who he is, though, right?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, I don't know
that... And I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I don't know that I really like him so much as a person. He does, like, in any interview ever with him, he sounds like the most annoying
person ever. Watching him on, like, BET interviews.
Yeah, we watched that at my house, remember?
Yeah, those are, like, the most amazing things ever.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
But... I don't know. I respect him so much, but I don't know that he's really like the most trustworthy guy. Well, no, I'm not saying as a person. What I'm saying is putting stock in what he's saying as answers. It seems like half the time he's just playing with expectation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, hey, there's something cool about 10, but it doesn't have to be 10.
God.
but if you were put on that podium, wouldn't you give the same kind of answers?
Oh, definitely.
We've talked
whether
about
it. I mean it or not.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about stuff like that before, and that if it's a good thing that we don't have like a mass. Well, I guess is that what this podcast is? If so, we've definitely let ourselves down, but it's a good thing we don't really have like mass reach with what we say, because we would just say a bunch of incorrect shit just to mess with people. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books, where we do not research facts.
Yeah, that's what this podcast is.
Yeah. So would you say, I don't know, I'm sure that we're kind of wrapping up a little.
4.5 out of 5. Highly recommend him as a director.
Yeah, I think that you should read his book. But, no, I mean, like, I don't think that there ever has been, nor will there be another one exactly like him. You know?
Because we're all unique, Craig.
That makes it sound like he's dead, doesn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Can we just, like, replay this if he dies? Can this be our Tarantino retrospective?
I doubt we'll still be making podcasts when he dies. Unless it's like totally unexpected. Like, but if he lives a normal lifespan, I'm going to be really pissed if it's 30 years and we're like, episode number 408. Well, you know, if we're covering a film about like...
Did we like really lower our release schedule?
Yeah, that's 30 years. It's like... Yeah. No, but I mean like, I don't know. If we're watching Six-Headed Shark Attack.
Dude, that sounds amazing.
Dude, Three-Headed Shark Attack has Danny Trejo in it.
Really?
Yeah, you want to do it?
I do.
All right.
I do now that I know that exists.
Well, it's a sequel to Two-Headed Shark Attack.
Is there a prequel that's like One-Headed Shark Attack? It's like, why does it need to specify One-Headed Shark? Okay, so yeah, Tarantino. So, what are we doing next week?
Next week, Bill's coming on with us.
Is that next week?
Yeah, that's Sunday.
Sunday.
We're doing...
Like Sunday at like night, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be like Yakuza Apocalypse and the IDW Ghostbusters Ninja Turtles crossover for the graphic novel.
That's right. I'm excited about that.
Yep. So excited you forgot what we were covering.
Well, no, I forgot it was next Monday or next time.
Yeah. So
I thought there was one in between it.
Anyway, are you done?
I guess.
Oh, I thought you were wrapping
you kicking
us
off the air.
No, man.
No. Okay, so let us know if you've got differing opinions, I guess, on like Twitter or the website at Beanie Pod.
I'm just laughing because I was like trying to get us to like just wrap up the Tarantino thing.
Oh, but, I thought you meant wrap up the whole thing.
No, like, are you done with Tarantino talk?
I thought we were done with Tarantino talk.
Dude's awesome. I can't wait to see Hateful Eight. This is a train wreck of an episode.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go ahead.
You can email us if you want to.
All right, yeah, we're done.
Okay.
Hit us up at BND Pod on Twitter. Join us next time with the amazing Bill Kertner from the band The Black Math Experiment.
We're not even plugging something relevant.
And Longbox Small Talk. And also, while you're there, check us out.
While you're there listening to us next week, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Turn it off and check us out. Fuck it, man. I'm done. Should we just leave it?
Oh, yeah. We're done.
The podcast you just heard is part of the B&E Network. Brought to you by BMoviesandEbooks.com.